It is time now for our Ask an Expert segment, where we connect you weekday mornings at 9:20 with top experts in various fields related to the pandemic. And today we're taking a look at how underlying health conditions like obesity can contribute to the seriousness of the illness when someone contracts COVID-19. So if you have a question that you'd like answered, you can email us now at askus@kcbsradio.com. And to answer your questions, joining us on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline is Dr. Sean Burke, founder and chief medical officer of Jumpstart MD. Good to have you with us, doctor.
Well, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we know obesity is a growing problem in the U.S. and around the world, but how do we connect that with the seriousness of COVID?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and this current obesity trend has really exposed the metabolic vulnerability of our country, where we see the people in America are actually more vulnerable to risk of serious coronavirus infections than other developed countries. And how that works is complicated, but you know, obesity is basically now prevalent in 42.4% of the American population. And 3 out of 4 Americans are either obese or overweight. And obesity turns out to be a risk factor for serious coronavirus infections. 2 studies, in fact, estimate that you're at 3 times higher risk of serious coronavirus infections if you have underlying obesity. And obesity is partly just the tip of the iceberg, whereas people with obesity have underlying metabolic ill health to the tune of almost 90% of Americans. There's only about 12.5% of Americans who are adult Americans who are metabolically healthy today. And all of those metabolic ill health risks are also risk factors for serious coronavirus infection. So the classic triad that you're hearing about these days is people with obesity, hypertension, and type 2 diabetes have a 3-fold higher risk of serious coronavirus infections. And you might ask, well, why does that happen? You know, it partly happens because at the core of the metabolic ill health that we have in epidemic proportions in this country, you have on the one hand the external manifestation, or what I think of as the tip of the iceberg, excess weight. You also have other things that when you look at lab testing and measurement of waist circumference or belly fat, measurement of blood pressure, are other signs of metabolic ill health that obesity is really just a risk factor for those things. So they're all interrelated. And those things can include prediabetes, present in 38% of the population, type 2 diabetes, present in almost 14% of the population, so that over half of Americans are now either prediabetic or diabetic.
Wow.
You also have other things like cholesterol abnormalities. And this is where I don't want to get too technical. But these all relate to something known as the metabolic syndrome. And in the cholesterol abnormalities in the metabolic syndrome, there's a low HDL or high density lipoprotein. This, you know, the good cholesterol that we want to be higher. There's elevation of triglycerides, a precursor for both prediabetes and diabetes, and also a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, just like low HDL.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have elevation in waist circumference, again, which or belly fat, which is at its root, again, another risk factor for diabetes, high blood pressure.
It's a lot to take in.
It is a lot. It is a lot. And I add to that 2 other things that are super common. One is fatty liver disease, which I think of as kind of the canary in the coal mine of our metabolic health in the country. And fatty liver disease is relevant, too, because it's present in about 30 to 40% of adult Americans.
Hmm.
And then when you're a pre-diabetic, it's present in more like 60% of adult Americans. And if you're obese, around 80 to 90% of obese adults have fatty liver disease. And again, without to get too technical, what all of these things share is underlying insulin resistance, a disorder of our principal energy storage hormone, which predisposes us to 8 different cancers,
okay,
heart attacks and strokes, Alzheimer's disease, microvascular dementia, et cetera. So that in the end, that's kind of the epidemic that I think we're seeing that makes us predisposed as a nation, because of diet-induced diseases, to more serious coronavirus infections.
Okay, we've got a lot of questions, so we're going to try to get to them. So we'll run through these as quickly as we can. This listener wants to know, my 11-year-old is gaining some extra weight during the shelter in place. Should I worry? What can I do to help him lose this extra weight?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I will say, In general, at Jumpstart MD, we don't see children that age, partly because we want obesity specialists for pediatric populations to be serving those populations, because there can be complex issues associated with that. In the end, I think that's a conversation that one should have with their 11-year-old. It's ultimately not about this child is getting fatter, but we want to help you achieve a healthier weight. Where's a good place to start? We're very much believers that real food-based diets are beneficial for people's weight and metabolic health. And to try to reduce consumption, in particular, of sugars and processed carbohydrates like white flours, starches in excess, which unfortunately today are really a huge portion and percentage of our calories consumed in the country.
Yeah.
And they tend to trigger insulin, and that tends to make us accumulate fat. And a lack of insulin helps us to burn fat. And so, yeah, starting with avoiding non-processed foods if you can, and going back to a real food-based diet that helps restore people's metabolic health and also their weight lines.
This listener wants to know, what is the status of research into why COVID-19 causes small and large blood clots, and what changes happen to the blood vessels to cause these clots?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, in the end, COVID becomes a vascular disease, and that's a very complicated conversation. But in your first phase of infection, you have the virus causing kind of more classic upper respiratory infection symptoms. But then in the end, the virus starts to affect people's blood vessels in a way that predispose us, to your listener's point, to blood clots and actually clotting in the lungs too, which also decreases the ability to exchange oxygen over time. So that's just one of the unusual characteristics of this SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus.
Okay. This listener wants to know, if you're overweight, obese, or more, shouldn't you water fast a few days a week down to a non-overweight weight for COVID? A little more walking or moderate dietary changes aren't going to move the needle enough on your COVID bad outcome risk fast enough to, I guess, given the spread rate in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, two thoughts, and the first thought is going to sound a little bit heretical. I am not a firm believer that exercise is a very effective weight loss tool. I think exercise is an incredibly effective wellness tool, health and wellness tool. But in the end, you can't outrun your mouth, so to speak, or outwalk your mouth. In terms of the first part of the question, vis-a-vis fasting, yes, there are definitely some studies suggesting that fasting can improve potentially metabolic health somewhat. There's also studies suggesting that it can improve weight somewhat. Most of those studies looked at over time show actually relatively modest or incremental weight loss to the tune of about 3%, which is not very much. Our average participant at Jumpstart MD loses 5% or 10 pounds in the first month. They lose about 30 pounds or 10% by the third month. And those kind of results are indeed clinically significant. The Food and Drug Administration actually defines clinical efficacy of a drug or device at 5% weight loss sustained over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they do that in particular because 5% weight loss, as an example, will reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 57%. So 5% weight loss is a pretty big deal clinically. We have people losing 5% weight loss in the first month and 10% in the third month. And then the only other thing I'd add about fasting is I'm not a proponent of fast longer than 24 hours because people tend to lose lean muscle mass fasting longer than 24 hours. And there have been multiple studies that have shown that in the past.
Yeah.
And I also think that if people are fasting, they should really do that in a medically supervised, in general, I would say a medically supervised environment, particularly if they might have comorbid conditions like diabetes, where they need to have their medications managed, high blood pressure, where they should have their medications managed, congestive heart failure, other things that really a fasting state can cause imbalances that could be concerning. So if one is going down a fasting path, test it on yourself with, 12-hour and 16-hour fast potentially to begin with. Watch for binge eating at the ends of the fast. And then our advice is not to fast over 24 hours because studies show that people lose lean muscle mass and proteins in such a state. And so we generally don't recommend fasting over 24 hours.
Should obese people be prioritized and sent to the front of the line for this vaccine?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, it goes to this question of what are the risk factors for serious coronavirus infections and which one of those are modifiable. The primary risk factors for serious coronavirus infection is really age, as we've all likely heard at this point in time. Additional risk factors go into that modifiable group. Excess weight, again, all the conditions associated with insulin resistance that we talked about previously, diabetes, coronary heart disease, hypertension, renal insufficiency, all, again, typically manifestations of underlying insulin resistance. And so at this point, I think we're better off as a society actually vaccinating the people who are older first, because they're really the ones at the highest risk. They're also the people who tend to have those other conditions, whether that's metabolic imbalances, like we talked about, high blood pressure, prediabetes, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, because age is really the number one risk factor for all of those conditions too. So if we start with age, we're covering the most vulnerable. We're also cross-covering those people who are likely to be less metabolically healthy, and therefore at higher risk too. And obesity, again, being a risk factor for those same concerns.
Are the effects, this listener wants to know, are the effects likely to linger longer if we're overweight?
You know, to generalize, I would say yes. There's two thoughts around that. One, yes, because those people are predisposed to more serious coronavirus infections that would tend to last longer. And as another thought that I just had related to insulin resistance, people with excess weight and metabolic imbalance have insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is really ultimately accelerating aging, so that our biologic age in years is actually longer than our chronologic age in years. So we become older biologically when we have excess weight and underlying metabolic imbalances. So yes, I think those people with obesity are likely to have more serious coronavirus infections that will last longer and potentially predispose them to hospitalizations or worse yet,
okay,
ICU care or death. But I don't necessarily think that it's predisposing them to some of the long-term sequelae that's been one of the concerns of certain populations of people who had serious, you know, coronavirus infections.
This listener says, I'm 142 pounds, have four underlying conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, chronic kidney disease, and congestive heart disease. Am I considered at high risk for COVID? This is also also said it's 74 years old. So this person's down on the list for the vaccine. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the classic profile of those who we should be most concerned about. And really the one of the primary reasons that we're all trying to protect ourselves from getting infected so we can prevent exposure to someone like that, who's at much higher risk of a serious coronavirus infection than people who are metabolically healthy and, let's say, to generalize, kind of under 60.
How responsible do you think companies are in contributing to the obesity problem these days? Should companies work on the message of calorie cutting, or tinker with the ingredients in food, or lower the calorie count?
I mean, it's a much bigger question. I don't necessarily blame companies. I think ultimately corporate America will respond to what the public is asking for. I think, unfortunately, on a national level, we have U.S. dietary guidelines that are a big part of the problem, where they're really designed for people who are healthy. But again, if we go back to what I was previously saying, we have 3 out of 4 Americans being overweight or obese right now. We also have nearly 90% of Americans being metabolically unhealthy, and dietary guidelines designed for a healthy population don't make sense for people like that.
Yeah.
And so, again, I don't necessarily think I would blame corporations on that. I would blame, I don't want to blame the government either, other than to say I think we need to evolve our dietary guidelines in a way that's more scientifically based and targets populations that really would benefit from not a one-size-fits-all dietary guideline that is simply not working for the American population. Again, yeah. One of the metabolically sickest populations in the developing world. And as a result, a population that's predisposed to much more serious coronavirus infections.
But that leads into this next question from a listener. With everything going on now in the world and the stress, the job losses, strains on relationships, Are people likely to care as much about staying in shape as they did before the pandemic?
Yeah. I think there's two sides of that. There's one, people working at home who freed up time that they were commuting, who may now be in a more consistent exercise routine in a way that's actually potentially positive. You also have, to your point, the joke previously was kind of COVID-19 is the 19 pounds I'm going to gain during this COVID pandemic. So people are eating, yes, out of stress and out of boredom, sometimes at home, and sometimes eating comfort foods that also tend to be more highly processed and predisposing them to gaining weight and becoming metabolically unhealthy. So I do think that's real. The good news here, we've just passed the solstice. We have the vaccine coming out. Hopefully there's hope on the way. And even with that hope, people can start to look after themselves and, for one, get a good guide path.
Yeah.
We have lots of people coming back to Jumpstart MD today because of that exact story. I gained a certain amount of weight during the pandemic. I'm eager to restore my healthy weight. I'm eager to restore my metabolic health. So that's been good. And we're open both in person and also online for people who don't feel comfortable coming into clinic.
This listener wants to know, what about the difference between men and women who gain weight or are obese? Does this virus hit one sex harder than the other?
I don't think there's great studies to support that at this point in time. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's true. So I'm going to say probably not, to the best of my knowledge.
All right. And that is where we shall leave it this morning. We certainly appreciate your time. Dr. Sean Burke is founder and chief medical officer of Jumpstart MD. We will have this up on our website, kcbsradio.com, shortly. That's where we have all our Ask an Expert interviews. And if you have a question that you'd like answered in the future, you can email us, askus@kcbsradio.com.